It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod. This episode recorded on the 27th of September, 2023. And in the pod with me this time, City of Napa Economic Development Director Neil Harrison. Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank
you. Great to have you. So the Economic Development Department or Division?
Division.
Division is part of the City of Napa under the
Community Development.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And your specific job is to do what?
Support the economy. We look at businesses, big part of it, jobs, job creation, and then kind of this idea of placemaking to support revenue generation.
Mm-hmm. And how does one acquire the skills and experience to do this job?
It's multidisciplinary. That's partly why I love it, because it's a lot of different things. It is entrepreneurship. So I have an entrepreneurship background. It is working in government and policy. So understanding kind of the inner workings of government to get things done, because at the end of the day, we're trying to push policies and create plans to make things happen.
Mm-hmm. When you say you have an entrepreneurship background, you've been in the private sector?
Yes.
It's a criticism a lot of people in government get, like, you've never worked a real job.
Right.
You can counter that?
Right.
What kind of entrepreneurship did you do?
I ran a business back in, actually, Africa.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And then I worked for, I had an import business for a little bit, and also worked for about 5 years in business acceleration. So supporting entrepreneurs to start, grow, scale their businesses. Mm-hmm. So really around kind of that Silicon Valley mentality. That was down in Santa Clara.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. What did people, you've been in this job with the City of Napa 3+ years.
Right before COVID.
Okay. What did people tell you about what the environment would be for you in the City of Napa in terms of attitudes about development?
Well, there were two big things that were really, that drove me to be very fascinated and interested in Napa. One, it's obviously, a lot of it's driven by the wine and the county and tourism and those sorts of things, right? But I saw the downtown area, for example, as this, with the flood control project and what that's done to allow for new development and sort of that upswing of the downtown area. Since I moved up here, so many people, say, oh, back when I was growing up, it was dead downtown. And a lot of that was because of the flood problems, right? And so the opportunity to be part of this sort of inflection point of Napa's growth and diversity, resiliency economically was attracted.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the first things critics will point to not just in this community, but almost anywhere, is the putting all your eggs in one basket mm-hmm. concern. And some think today we've gone too far in terms of hospitality and tourism. What happens when people stop drinking wine? What happens when they decide they'd rather go to Mendocino than Napa?
Right.
And so on. Does that thinking hold any credence in the way you're looking at the future here?
Well, of course. This is a tourism-driven economy to some degree. Also, there's a lot of additional assets that Napa has that can be leveraged, that is being leveraged. So with the wine industry, you have a lot of the manufacturing assets. So distribution, fabrication of supplies all the way through that value chain. Also, we have opportunities in things like healthcare and health sciences and so forth that we're looking into investigating. Like, you have the health center up in Trancas that's sort of been this organic growth of an industry and the businesses that around that industry. And so the question is, well, how can you cultivate that to to grow and bring in different types of businesses to create new great jobs. Mm-hmm. The real sort of economic growth area for the city, and not just the, in terms of industries, but space, is down south, right? So looking at, you know, the Napa Pipe, the corporate park, and how that bleeds into the county area in American Canyon, there's a lot of space and room for growth. And it's also well connected to the bay and to highway systems and so forth too. So I work for the city, and there is not a economic development corporation for the county. However, I work closely with the Chamber of Commerce. They are very driven towards this idea of kind of connecting through the county and the region, and also the different government jurisdictions that things like, you know, South Napa bleeds into, so American mm-hmm. Canyon County.
Yeah. So I want to hit you with a challenging topic here for a second. But it's challenging when I try to think about it, mm-hmm. at least. One of the most common statements you see, and I look at the comments on Napa Register stories, like the one about the old Safeway downtown recently, anything that gets a lot of comments, I'm going to read through because we want to talk about it on the radio and understand what the local folks are thinking. And the most common thing that comes up in regard to economic development of every kind, whether it's just opening another Starbucks or a big hotel proposal, someone will inevitably say, Napa doesn't need another blank, blank, blank. I remember Napa doesn't need two Targets mm-hmm. in the same town. That was one for a while. Napa doesn't need another hotel. Napa doesn't need another Starbucks and so on. And I've spent a lot of frustrating time trying to explain to people in my way what Napa needs is not something that, for example, that the city council can necessarily push a button and make happen, or you, or that the opinions of people who live here, because it's driven by the market,
mm-hmm.
right? That analysis and data tells companies there's an opportunity here, so we're going to pursue it. Am I right about that? I'd like some additional backing or understanding to explain and talk about that topic better.
Yeah, well, let's dig into it. So you're right. It's driven by the private sector seeing the opportunity, and it's also driven by the policies that the city adopts, right? So, you know, we were talking about kind of tourism earlier. The downtown has a downtown specific plan adopted 10 years ago, and that sets a vision. It sets a set of policies to allow for certain types of development there, right? Same with our general plan that was just adopted, the 2040 general plan. So those things are out there in terms of like zoning for commercial spaces, height limits, setbacks, design standards, and so forth. So you have that out there, and then a private developer will come in and make decisions based off of set of data. How many people live there? What's the competition around? What kind of foot traffic could they get in front of their buildings and so forth? And they invest in the community. And that investment in the community is actually a good thing a lot of the times. It brings more jobs. It brings more revenue for the city. It can be a net benefit. We're happy to get into specifics, yeah, but that's the generally mm-hmm. what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Do you get that same kind of question that I see in those comments about we don't need this? I mean, they're expressing a frustration that maybe there's something else they would prefer, but lacking the ability to understand that wanting something doesn't necessarily create the conditions where it works in our system.
Right.
You know, this is the system we live under. Capitalism is capitalism, and once things are like you say, part of a plan. When there's a plan in place that we're going to allow these things, those things are probably going to happen.
And that's been the growth. Yeah.
I guess part of my frustration is that sometimes I feel if folks in any community engage more in the discussions, general plan discussions, specific plan committees and meetings that are held, that you wouldn't be surprised
right
when something is
right
proposed.
Right. Right. And there's a lot of ways for citizens to get engaged in any, all these plans.
Yeah.
And definitely would love to see more citizen engagement, especially younger citizens to come out. I was just at last week, the city's running the Citizens Academy program, which is an excellent program. It takes a cohort of citizens and walks them through government functions. With the hope that they're better informed, but also more engaged. Those kinds of, that's a great starting point for people that want to get involved or also any of these community meetings, city council and so forth.
So I want to jump to the other side of the coin a little bit here. Mm-hmm. You mentioned how much the flood control project changed downtown Napa. Absolutely true. One of the most striking things to think about, if you've been around a while or just go back and look at the old photos, going east on First Street from Soskal, there used to be nothing. Mm-hmm. Literally open fields, one house, and nothing could be built in there because of the flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the way it was when I came here in the 80s, and it was that way until very, very recently in the in the long term, right? Now, that corridor between Soskal and Silverado Trail on First Street is the most dense, people-wise, probably in town, right? First in Maine and then across to Oxbow, yep. Right? And when the proposal for the South Garden property at what we used to call Copia came out, a lot of people thought, are you kidding me? You're going to put all that more stuff in there and that many more cars? And then the conversation is expanded when you know there are other entitled properties in that corridor beyond the South Napa Yard area. And you start to wonder about the killing the golden goose thing and make it so so crowded, so congested, so hard to park and all that. It's a concern. And the question, I guess, becomes how do you know when to tap the brakes? And is there such a thing as being at capacity?
Right. This is a issue I hear a lot and involved in a lot of those conversations. That property, the south parking lot, this is a good example of that was sold off, right? Sold off to a private citizen or group of citizens with standards and zoning in place about what they could do there, right? So they're moving forward with increasing the value on their investment. And it's the same with all these other properties that have been entitled and so forth. So in terms of the planning, the general plan, downtown specific plan, they set what can be absorbed in the city, right? They study how many more hotel rooms can the city absorb, like forecasting out the demand for people to come to the city of Napa and whatnot. And then the private developers looking at those numbers and saying, like, I can make a profit here, and they move forward. It's a challenge to try to direct private investment too much, to just say you can't do this, you can't do that. What we're seeing a lot more of the hotels propose, which is a good thing, is housing. So they have to pay into affordable housing pot. Many of them are actually proposing, we'll help build. So not just putting it into the pot, but we'll help build additional affordable housing, either on site of their development or off site. And then of course, if it's a hotel, they're paying an annual, the TOT and a housing fee, mm-hmm. Which helps us build more housing.
Yeah. And similarly, if I understand it right, the another criticism that comes up, maybe unfounded, is, oh, they allowed that development without requiring any parking, right? Particularly in the denser areas, but that developer is usually paying a fee, right? Parking in lieu.
Yep, parking impact fee.
Same idea?
Yes, and that is actually a challenge. I don't know if you've stayed current to state laws, but
some not
basically
all.
There's a new law that circles a half mile radius around a major transit center. Omits parking minimums for development. So the idea for the downtown, in the downtown specific plan and policies for this like parking impact fee, which is where you, instead of building parking, you pay into a pot of money per space, and that is designated only for the city to use to increase supply. And that tool has been diminished, frankly. So we have to figure out where and how we're going to build additional parking when that need is there.
So I want to circle back to use the word entitled, which has become a word people use differently in the common conversation these days. It has nothing to do with an entitlement on a piece of property, which is a legal term, right?
Mm-hmm.
Explain that for a second, because it comes up, and I'm not sure a lot of people reading the news, listening to stories, understand what that really means.
So what do you mean when a property, a project on the property has been entitled?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that means that project went through planning process, the city's internal review process. So let's say that property has to meet what's on the zoning and all the development standards and building standards. So there's a rendering, there's a use of that. That gets voted at the Planning Commission and then City Council. And so once it goes through all those hurdles, it's entitled to go and start building on, so they can pull building permits.
And in some cases, a project goes from entitlement to construction just mm-hmm. like that. And then there are other many cases we can look at where it languishes for a very long time.
Yeah.
And confuses people.
Yeah. And that's always a challenge. And this is one of those things that, you know, where's the city's right on forming that? Because say a developer comes in, they own a piece of property, and they go through the entitlement process to get it approved, right? Right when it gets entitled from the city council, you've added a tremendous amount of value on that property, because you said, now I can construct, I can build, right? That doesn't always mean they have the money to construct. So oftentimes you have a situation where someone's going through that process to add that value, get it entitled, and then shop it to get investors to build the thing. And these are tens of millions of dollar projects, and it takes a interesting capital stack to get that done. And that ends up being the bottleneck, if you will. And in Napa, you're competing because construction costs have gone up. Supply chains for materials have gone up. You're competing in a Bay Area marketplace. So it's tough. And that's where a lot of these projects sort of like end up. They end up on, I need to get investors. I need to create that capital stack to move forward.
Yeah. And if you're in the middle of that, getting investors, and along comes the 08, 09 recession,
right.
Along comes a pandemic, along comes fear,
back years.
Fear of another recession, mm-hmm. or, you know, look at a 15-year span.
Yeah.
So that's why things can take so long mm-hmm. to even put a shovel in the ground.
Right.
Okay. I think that's good to know. Now I want to take a classic local example of something and ask you to sort of explain how it would work. One of the most common criticisms or comments when people are doing the NAPA doesn't need another, they will then say, what we really need is, and here comes, a skating rink. This has become a joke for a lot of us. I'm always kind of betting how long will it take for somebody mentions a skating rink in these comments. It always comes up, and a lot of locals have fond memories, if you're of a certain age, of going to the roller rink and hanging out with your friends. It's a thing from an earlier time. Let me ask it this way. When somebody would say to you, why doesn't the city have a skating rink? Why does the city open a skating rink? Let me ask you that as a question. Why don't they?
Well, the city's not going to open and run a skating rink, right? So it takes a business to come in and find a site for a skating rink and do the economic analysis to say this is going to be profitable or break even or I'm going to have to subsidize it. We were talking about community centers earlier. So that would be my answer.
Mm-hmm. And the city wouldn't endeavor to build something like that and operate it because?
That should be a private business. Do you want your taxpayer money going into a skating rink?
Mm-hmm. And some people would immediately say yes, because I want places for my kids to go. And is that different than like a swimming pool?
Well, the city operates the parks and so forth, and lots of activities for kids and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. And another side of that coin, I'm being devil's advocate a little bit, but liability is probably what killed skating rinks. Like it killed go-kart tracks and trampoline parks and, right? Swimming pools. It doesn't take more than one lawsuit for a city to be in big trouble. Maybe not Napa, but, you know, smaller communities where the budget's tight, one big lawsuit and you're in a deficit, right? So there's all these underlying reasons. Things are not the same as they were in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and people didn't sue each other as aggressively as they do. Complicated. All right. Now, another topic, blighted properties. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of prime examples downtown. Really under my skin, every time I drive by certain places, like, when are they going to do something? And I'm of the attitude that the not just Napa, but every city has to be more harsh on this and take those properties away from people who refuse to either maintain them or repair them. Why are we not doing that? I know that's a bigger question than just your department, but
I can probably guess some of the properties you have in mind. You just mentioned liability lawsuits, right? So for the city, for a city to attack blight, you first have to go in and go through a process of identifying code violations and all these things, right? That takes legal muscle to go through. And then secondly, you can, I guess the biggest tool in the city's toolbox is eminent domain, right? So you're basically telling the property owner, we're taking this from you. That's a long process. That's an expensive process. There's a lot of legal hurdles to go through that. I will say that the city, city manager's office, city council, they want to see some of these projects move, as do I. And there are some funds dedicated and earmarked for us to start those processes, meaning go through looking at potential code violations and whatnot. To see how you can move them along. The other way is working with the actual property owner and getting them to either sell it or move on it themselves. And that's another avenue we've been working on. And you mentioned sort of the Safeway site is a really great example. Obviously has some problems in terms of contamination and broken building and whatnot on it. However, anytime and there's been several of these, I'll have a developer interested in investing in the city. I start pointing them to the Safeway site. Go talk to the owners there, let's see if we can nudge them, put some pressure on them. There was a Register article that came out last week. Mm-hmm. That's another way of putting pressure. Yeah, yeah. So there's sort of that political pressure on the property owner to realize that this is a blighted eyesore, and it's you might be making money off of that. You might see appreciation of value, but you're not being a good citizen, community member, right, by just holding on to a broken building that's an eyesore.
The metaphor I use is the story of the dog in the manger. If you know your Bible school stories, right? That was the dog sleeps on top of the hay, won't let the cow eat it, even though the dog can't eat the hay himself,
right?
And that's useful. Mm-hmm. This has been really excellent. Thanks for fielding these weird questions. I'm trying to sort of lay a base of understanding, you know, mm-hmm. for myself and others who, when these topics come up and there's a story in the paper about the Safeway building, you know, like, read it. That was a really good bit of reporting that laid out all the reasons why it's stuck where it is. Mm-hmm. And every one of these other things we've discussed, there's a story behind it. And there's a reason why it is or isn't, you know. So Neil Harrison, City of Napa's Economic Development Division Director. I'm sure your contact info is on the website, and you have a newsletter that you send out periodically.
Yes. Monthly, we have a newsletter where we provide updates to things we're doing in our economic development division, and also a lot of resources for businesses.
Cityofnapa.org, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Very good. Neil, thanks for being here. Great to meet you. I hope we'll talk again soon. Yep. This has been the Berry Pod, recorded on the 27th of September, 2023.
You're listening to the Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.